begin shortly. And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you can start your work week with us as we take you up till the top of the hour. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in using social media, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to continue our preview of the NFC East. We'll be joined by Zach Berman of the Philadelphia Inquirer in a few minutes to preview the Eagles after Paul and I previewed the Redskins on Friday. So stay tuned for that. We'll also get to your phone calls along the way. And remember, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Paul, as I mentioned, we focused a lot on the Redskins on Friday. We're going to shift gears to the Eagles today. And, you know, this is a team really taking on a completely new identity, new coaching staff, new defensive scheme. They're going from a 3-4 to a 4-3, and they also brought in some new talent as well.
You know, the thing that I'm really curious about is that Chip Kelly totally remade this roster over the short time that he was there, won 10 games in each of those two regular seasons, but did not get a postseason victory. Okay, and I was not a believer in Chip Kelly. You guys know that if you've been watching the show for a few years. I'm not so sure he's going to be great for the 49ers either. I think these college geniuses who come into the NFL are in for a rude awakening. But be that as it may, the problem with what happened with Chip Kelly is that basically he blew up what the Eagles were and reformatted them into everything he wanted, and now they've had to reformat them again. So I don't know what to expect from the Philadelphia Eagles this season. I know that if I just look at their roster, especially on their defensive side of the ball, they might have, right now going in, the most talented overall defense in the division. I don't think anybody would argue that. But how does it all fit together? And that's where the change-up in personnel and the change-up specifically in the coaching staff comes in, because you just don't know how that stew is going to cook. And if it doesn't cook right, you wind up with a non-playoff team again.
Yeah, Jim Schwartz is now the new defensive coordinator, so he's moving back to that 4-3 scheme, which means that they're going to move their edge linebackers back to the line of scrimmage. And then you're also going to have Fletcher Cox, who played on the outside in the 3-4 on the defensive line. Now he's moving back to defensive tackles. So, you know, on paper it looks great, as you alluded to, Paul. However, whether or not it translates to a field remains to be seen, depending on what happens over the course of the season. And then on offense, you know, this was a team, Paul, last year that struggled to run the football. Now they're bringing and Doug Peterson, who comes over from the Andy Reid West Coast school of thought, you figure they're going to try to be at least a little bit more balanced on offense this season.
You would think so. Now, part of the problem they had last year is they did not know how to use those running backs. They wound up collecting a whole bunch of them, and they just couldn't get them in sync and make it work. Things are a little bit easier now because, let's face it, DeMarco Murray's not there. That's one less guy to carry the ball. So there are less options, less choices to call, less plays in the playbook, so to speak, because now you've narrowed it down a bit. But it's a curiosity that all of us are going to have to figure out over the course of the season.
Well, speaking of the Philadelphia Eagles, to shed more light on the team, we are now joined by Zach Berman, who covers the Eagles for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Zach, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's well. Glad to talk to you guys.
Great to have you, Zach. You know, we were just talking about the biggest changes with Philadelphia, aside from obviously things that have happened with the roster, is that coaching staff. From what you've been able to glean, and I know that Doug Peterson is a former Philadelphia Eagle. I mean, he's got some roots in the organization. How much of the upheaval is going to affect this team going forward into training camp and getting used to, and then as the season begins, how much of a feeling out process is there going to be, or is it your perception that everybody's very comfortable in their skin right now and they're going to hit the ground running when training camp starts?
Sure, good question. I think it was a bigger adjustment 3 years ago than it is this year. I mean, when they brought Chip Kelly in, it was so radically different from what a lot of these guys had experienced. And even though now they have a lot of players who have only played for Chip Kelly, the system they have, the structure they have, it's more of a traditional NFL style. And for those who've been elsewhere or those who were in the Eagles before Chip Kelly, it's very similar to what Andy Reid had here for 14 years. So from an organizational perspective, I think the higher-ups, the front office, the ownership level, they're pretty comfortable with the structure, the style. And in terms of the locker room, most of these guys who, as I said, who came from elsewhere or who were here in Philadelphia before Chip, it's not much of a shock to their system.
Well, Zach, speaking of the locker room, one of the biggest stories this offseason was about Sam Bradford and whether or not he was welcoming in the competition at the quarterback position. From what I've heard, it seems as if Doug Peterson has been very pleased with his productivity at OTAs. How has the quarterback competition played out so far during OTAs, and is Bradford clearly the front runner as they get set for training camp?
Yeah, he is, and there really isn't much of a competition. I mean, they signed Sam Bradford to be their starting quarterback. He's going to be their starting quarterback, and it's for this year. Obviously, when you take Carson Wentz number two, you're not waiting a few years for him. But they want Wentz to learn this year, and they want Bradford to be their starter. That's why they gave him the contract that they did. And from all indications, and frankly from the way he looked in the spring, he is and should be their starter. Now the question is whether he can stay healthy, whether he can be productive. But I don't think there's much of a quarterback controversy here. What there is there's quarterback intrigue because the most important person in the organization is the third-string quarterback right now.
Zach, let me ask you this. As I look at the NFC East, and feel free to disagree, I look at the talent on these rosters and I say, well, you know what? Philadelphia probably has the most talented defense right now going in as we speak on June the 24th of all the teams in the division. But I think they're last in terms of talent on offense in the division. When you look at what the Giants, the Redskins, and the Cowboys can do, of course, if Tony Romo is healthy and if Kirk Cousins doesn't have, you know, a regular human kind of year after being Superman last season. Would you agree with that assessment? And if you don't, how would you disagree? Where would you rank the two units? How do you see it?
Yeah, you know, I agree with what you say about the offense side of the ball, and in particular the skill position players. I think that's where they lack relative to the other parts of the division. What the Eagles are hoping for is that they get good offensive line play, and they had some really good players who underperformed last year, and Jason Peters and Jason Kelsey. They paid a lot of money to Brandon Brooks to kind of solidify that right guard spot, and then Lane Johnson is one of the top young tackles in the league at right tackle. So they're hoping that if they get better blocking at the line and they get better protection for their quarterback, that's going to be the key to kind of helping out the offense there. In terms of the defense, as you are about them, I agree that they do have some good talent there. I think they have serious depth issues, particularly at linebacker and the interior defensive line. And then I think their cornerbacks are not very good. That being said, Fletcher Cox might be the best player in the division or certainly the best defensive player in the division. He's definitely up there. Their safety combination of Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod
right.
is the strength of this team. And then they have some guys who can get to the quarterback, whether it's Vinnie Curry, Connor Barlin, Brandon Graham. So there are some things to like on the defensive side of the ball, but they can't afford injuries there.
Talking with Zach Berman, who covers the Eagles for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Zach, speaking of the defense, they're going from a 3-4 to a 4-3 now that Jim Schwartz is the new defensive coordinator, and that means movement for some of the linebackers back to the defensive line, Fletcher Cox moving inside. I know you said there's questions about depth, but at least from a schematic standpoint, how does the movement from a 3-4 to a 4-3, you think, help the productivity of this defense?
I think it's going to help them quite a bit. Frankly, there's a lot of people who had the opinion that they should have been a 4-3 defense during these past 3 years based on their personnel. Now, obviously, the preferred scheme of the former coaching staff was to run that two-gap and 3-4 defense. But when you look at the type of talent that they have, Jim Schwartz was a really good hire as a defensive coordinator. And these players fit. I mean, Fletcher Cox as a penetrating 4-3 defensive tackle, that's what he was drafted to play. Brandon Graham, Vinnie Curry, those guys were drafted to play 4-3 defensive end. Michael Kendricks was drafted to be a 4-3 linebacker. Nigel Bradham has experience in the scheme. So I think that in the front seven, which is obviously what's most affected when you go from a 3-4 to a 4-3, they have a lot of guys who really fit this scheme. Now, I think a defensive tackle, Benny Logan, transitioning from nose tackle to a penetrating tackle, that's going to be something to watch. And then Connor Barwin, who's been one of their most valuable players during the past three seasons, now he's playing with his hand in the ground. He's not concerned about it because he had experience in Houston playing that way, at the University of Cincinnati playing that way, but it is still an adjustment for a guy who was really a jack-of-all-trades linebacker.
You know, Giants fans would be mad at me, Zach, if I didn't ask you about what's going on with Reuben Randle, who signed with Philadelphia as a free agent during the offseason. Where does he fit into that receiving core, into the passing game? I know it was a one-year deal, and he didn't get huge money, which says to me he's in a prove-it situation.
Yeah, in Reuben Randle's situation, he was up and down during the spring because he had gallbladder surgery, so that sidelined him a bit. But the coaching staff's really intrigued by him. He has an opportunity to contribute. Wide receiver is a pretty undistinguished group on the Eagles roster, and Reuben Randle's going to have a chance to play. When you look at just the size, the ability, there's a lot there to like, and Giants fans would probably say the same thing. Now what Reuben Randle has admitted is that in terms of kind of his attitude or the way he's perceived, that's something he needs to pay attention to. But when you look at it from an opportunity perspective and a talent perspective, he's a guy who's really going to get a chance to contribute. Jordan Matthews is probably their top receiver. Nelson Aguilar was a first-round pick last year, but did not play especially well.
Right.
And after those two guys, it's really unsettled. So I think Randall's definitely a player to watch during the next month or two.
Another facet of the offense I think that's interesting to watch, Zach, is the running game. And Paul and I were talking about this before you joined us. DeMarco Murray, he was traded to Tennessee. Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles are still around. But, you know, there's always questions about the durability with respect to both of those players. And, you know, as you know from covering the team last year, the running game struggled. It really wasn't until that last game against the Giants where I thought that they had their breakout performance. How much progress do you see from this running game? And how are the carries going to balance out? Is Matthews going to be the workhorse, or is there somebody else that nobody is anticipating right now?
Yeah, well, this goes back to something we discussed earlier, which is the offensive line. And the reason I bring that up is because the Eagles had three Pro Bowl running backs last year, or three running backs who made the Pro Bowl in their career, and they were not a very good rushing offense, in large part because the blocking struggled up front. And you could say, you know, the scheme might have had something to do with it, or the runners had something to do with it. But the offensive line did not play well last year. So if they can block, that's going to be a big thing helping the running game. Ryan Matthews will be the top back, but as you said, there's durability questions there. Darren Sproles is definitely going to be involved in the offense. Running, receiving, he'll be a major factor, I'd say. And then they have some opportunities after that. And Wendell Smallwood, the fifth-round pick out of West Virginia that they're pretty intrigued with right now. Kenyon Barner is a holdover from last year's roster. Played well in the preseason last year, and he's going to have a chance. And then there's an undrafted rookie from Oregon, and his name's Byron Marshall. He was not with the team during the spring because of graduation rules, but in training camp, he's someone to watch. I still think, though, that Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles are going to be the top two ball carriers here.
Zach Berman from the Philadelphia Inquirer joining us to talk Philadelphia Eagles on the show. One final question from me, Zach, and I know we touched about on Sam Bradford earlier, but I'm going to ask you a couple of hypotheticals here and answer them in whatever order you choose. If Sam Bradford struggles and things don't go well over the first five, six games of the season, at what point do you think there starts to get that groundswell that, okay, Carson Wentz is the future, maybe people are going to start wanting to put him in there, whether it's the players, the coaches, the fans, wherever that groundswell is. Is that possible, or is it pretty much understood from the people in Philadelphia that Wentz was picked number one, but he's the future and he is not the present? And then I guess part B to that question is, if Bradford gets hurt, does Chase Daniels become the new starter, or do they force feed Wentz and say, hey, you know what, Chase Daniel, you are only a placeholder anyway. The franchise guy is going to get in.
Yeah, sure. Both very good questions. To the first question, I would say that externally that groundswell for Wentz will probably come after Bradford's first interception. I mean, the fans are clamoring to see Wentz. He's you know, the price that they paid, the intrigue about him, and I'm sure you guys can relate back to 2004 when Eli was the number one pick and Kurt Warner was the starter. And even though Kurt Warner had that distinguished resume, people wanted to see Eli. So the question is going to be from the coaching staff, and I think they're going to be pretty resistant to it. I think when consideration's made is if they're really struggling or if they're falling out of playoff contention, at that point you need to start looking for the future. But the Eagles seem to have a pretty concrete plan here to start Bradford and really develop Carson Wentz. It's what Doug Peterson, that he was kind of in that Bradford role back in 1999 when the Eagles drafted Donovan McNabb number
sure.
two. And McNabb eventually took over that season. But Peterson was the day one starter. And I should say the other part of that, too, is that Sam Bradford's under contract for next year. I would imagine that the Eagles want to get some value for him because they gave up a lot of draft capital to trade up to get Wentz. So the best-case scenario for the Eagles is for Bradford to be in there, stay healthy, and really you know bring up that value so they can get something for him. To the second part of the question, I think if it's a short-term injury, you'll see Chase Daniel. I think if there's something long-term, that's when they need to think hard about Carson Wentz. And the reason I say that, and this is purely my opinion, once you go to Wentz, you really don't go back. I mean, once the Giants went to Eli Manning, they haven't had another starting quarterback since then. You know, he hasn't missed a game. I think once Carson Wentz is the first string quarterback, then there's no seesawing him inside out of the lineup. That's an organizational commitment at that point. So I think there's a long-term injury you need to look at Wentz. There's a short-term injury you look at Chase Daniel.
Yeah, all of a sudden you got that Drew Bledsoe, Tom Brady scenario, and you don't get the job back.
Well, that's the NFC East for you. Always have a storyline brewing. Zach, before we let you go, when I've watched the Eagles over the last few years, at least one of the phrases that comes to mind when you talk about the identity of this team is opportunistic. They have been very good at creating turnovers and also scoring touchdowns on special teams, regardless of some of the other struggles. Now that there's a turnover in coaching staff, some change in terms of the roster, how much of that identity do you think will still be present, or has the roster shaken up so much that it's really an unreliable type of facet of their team?
Yeah, you know, I wonder if that was the players or that was the system. And I give a lot of credit to Chip Kelly there because it was such an emphasis from Chip, from the coaching staff, especially the special teams component. I mean, if you saw practices in Philadelphia and you saw the amount of time they invested in special teams, I've seen practices from a number of different coaches in the NFL, and that really stood out to me about Chip Kelly's practices, and it showed on the field. And same thing with forcing turnovers. But the key part of that too is, you know, that they had some players who did it, and I think that's going to be something that the Eagles are going to need to do. But the big thing this year from the Eagles defense is going to be attacking, and that's I think getting to the quarterback, getting into the backfield. That's been a staple of Jim Schwartz defenses, and I really think that's going to be the key emphasis there. In terms of the special teams, they retained special teams coordinator Dave Fipp. So schematically, philosophically, I think some of that's still there. They have a lot of those special teams players who've been really productive for them, whether it's Chris Maragos, Brian Brayman,
sure.
Obviously Darren Sproles. Trey Burton. So there's some holdover there, but you can't count on the amount of non-offensive touchdowns that the Eagles got during the past 2 years. And it came back to bite them, I think, because they relied so much on that. The Eagles are going to need more from their offense this year. So I think that's really where to look. It's going to be a part of the team's identity, but you can't count on it.
Absolutely. Great point there. Zach Berman, who covers the Eagles for the Philadelphia Inquirer, kind enough to give us a few minutes to help preview the team for the upcoming season. Zach, greatly appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Zach.
No problem, guys. Thanks.
All right, Zach Berman with plenty of insight on the Philadelphia Eagles, what to expect from them. We covered the Redskins on Friday, and you covered the Cowboys, I know, on Thursday, so at least give you an outlook of what the NFC East is all about.
And tomorrow we will preview the New Orleans Saints. Week number two on the Giants' schedule is a home game against Drew Brees and company, and we will continue to go through the Giants' schedule as we proceed over the next several weeks. But the one thing that I was curious about, because everybody always knows a quarterback controversy is always on the front burner whenever you talk about a team that has drafted a number one. Zach seemed pretty convinced, it sounds like to me, that barring a significant injury to Bradford, he's going to be the guy this year.
Which I'm not necessarily surprised to hear, Paul. I mean, I figured that the game
Wentz
plan
needed
was
needed some work.
Wentz was,
he was
the long
need to be
term.
Coached. He's groomed. Going to need to be coached up. He's
correct.
Not. He's not pro ready.
Exactly. Now Chase Daniel, comfort with Doug Peterson, came over from Kansas City. That's your insurance policy in my mind. And then Wentz is your long term replacement ultimately. But you know, when they brought back Bradford, I just felt that they were thinking short-term versus long-term, not necessarily Wentz is immediately going to be the answer, as we saw with perhaps the Giants, as he was alluding to, in 2004 when Eli Manning was a rookie. And, you know, you also need to consider this. Now, I understand there's question marks about Sam Bradford, his durability. There's no doubt about that, Paul. But I thought from watching the Eagles at the beginning of the season to the end of the season, I actually thought, and I know it's a new system and a new coach right now, I thought Bradford played his best football late in the season. I thought he gradually improved as the year went along.
He did. But, you know, for him, look, I don't think he's that good a quarterback to begin with, to be perfectly frank with you. I don't think he can sustain that kind of play over the course of 16 games. And obviously, besides the injury factor, the Lions must have felt the same way or they wouldn't have gotten rid of him. Okay, so, I mean, whether or not you like Sam Bradford, you can't argue the fact that he does not have a unanimous vote of support from everybody around the league that he is a playoff starter. I mean, I don't think everybody, you know, believes he is.
Well, when you bring in Chase Daniel and you draft a young quarterback, I'm assuming not necessarily the writing is on the wall tomorrow, but the writing is on the wall that they may not consider you the long-term answer.
Yeah, the Eagles are not exactly putting that in stone. Let's put it that way.
But any quarterback, I think the significance of the running game, no matter how talented or how much upside or lack thereof is for a quarterback, they need to get that running game going. And I think that's a common theme across the landscape of the NFC.
I only have one other thing to add, and then we'll get to our calls and our tweets. In asking him about Reuben Randall, I didn't know about the gallbladder surgery. So hopefully, Reuben, you'll have a quick recovery. That'd be great. You know, he's a good guy. And he's got a wonderful first-round skill set. We've been saying that for years. The problem is the frustration over when the production is inconsistent, as it has been throughout his NFL career. And that's great if the Eagles are really going to give him a chance to become a significant part of their receiving core. But I will tell you this, the minute he starts running sloppy, I don't know if sloppy is the right word, but the minute he starts running routes that aren't exactly where they should be, and the minute that ball starts going awry because he's not exactly where he should be, they're going to lose patience with him in a hurry.
But the opportunity is there, as you mentioned, because when you look at the receiving
he
core,
had so many opportunities here, though, to do it.
No doubt about it.
And outside of that three-game stretch at the end of the season, when, you know, he was really playing like Reuben Randall should have from the very get-go when the Giants drafted him, we didn't see enough of that here. And that's why he's gone. The Giants did not see enough of that.
The consistency.
Nothing's more frustrating to a personnel guy, a GM, or a head coach, or maybe the fans for that matter, than a guy who has a very high-level skill set and then doesn't put that forth on the field each and every week. Look, anybody can have a bad game. That's fine. But the problem with Reuben Randall was that the inconsistencies weren't weren't spotted every once in a while. It was dotted all over the schedule.
Well, and you look at last season, Paul, we talk about how there's an opportunity in Philadelphia this year opposite Jordan Matthews. The opportunity last year with Victor Cruz out of the equation is essentially the same exact thing that's presenting himself in Philadelphia, where he could be the true number two. But then again, it goes back to, can he be that consistent number two where you know what you're going to get out of him game to game?
I tell people all the time, he's had two of the quietest seasons. I mean, stat-wise, right? 8 touchdown catches last year, right?
Which is a career high for him.
And you say, that's okay. You know what? That's okay. Number two receiver, 8 touchdown catches. Boy, they were quiet touchdown catches.
Well, because normally if you have the 8 touchdowns from a number two wide receiver, you think it's coming off of big plays or something like that. And, you know, he was a red zone target. He did come through. But I think what the focus had been all of last season, Paul, was in between the end zones,
yeah,
where the productivity,
yeah,
was game to game.
And, I mean, the year before, 938 yards. How many times did you hear me say 70 catches over 900 yards and only 3 touchdowns? And it's like that was the most quiet 900-yard receiving season that I've ever seen. And it was really, really frustrating. Anyway, it is what it is. Wish him well. Again, I think he's a good guy. But, you know, where he lands in the Philadelphia scope of things remains to be seen. He's going to have to earn it like he did here. And if he doesn't earn it and he isn't consistent, you know what? He's going to find himself as the 3 or the 4 in Philadelphia, even though there's clearly opportunity to become the 2.
So we've been focusing on the rest of the NFC East over the last few days, and we'll continue that dialogue as we take you up to the top of the hour. We're having some issue with our phone, so we apologize for some of those technical issues. As soon as they are up and running, we will let you know at 201-939-4513. For those of you following the show, hit us up on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll certainly get to all of your tweets.
I think we got some here.
We do indeed.
All right,
we'll run
so let's rock. By the way, at Giants WFAN, if you want to hit me up individually, or at Lance Meadow, Meddow.
There you go. Look at that. I don't even have to remind you. You got it on the
tee. I got the rhythm going right
do.
There.
Boy, you're bringing the A game today here.
And Nathaniel wants to tell us they have no one better than him. Randall is their number one as of now. I think Matthews would have
without
an argument.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, when you talk about receiving threats, we didn't even get into their tight ends.
Correct, and they have some depth there. He did mention Trey Burden, who's a tight end, but he's more of a special team.
Right.
Zach Ertz, clearly, who has done plenty of damage.
They
over the
get
last
production
few years.
Out of those guys.
Well, that's the similarity, Paul. It's interesting you brought that up. To me, that's the similarity between the Redskins and the Eagles. I think if there's one position where you say they got a few options there, they can line 2 or 3 guys up depending on what they want out of their scheme. That's the common trait I see with Philadelphia and Washington, whereas Dallas, it's more about Jason Witten. And here with the Giants, there's some options, but we don't know necessarily who's going to emerge.
Mm-hmm. I think here's a really interesting comment from Robert, who says he's the NYG reporter in terms of his Twitter handle. Says the Eagles need a 10-year quarterback, solid starter like Eli Manning. Giants win NFC East. Well, I mean, again, we've talked about this before. Every team in the NFC East has questions. We both happen to – I think you agree with me. You're not a huge Sam Bradford fan.
I mean, I don't think,
he's
necessarily
okay.
An elite quarterback.
He's
but,
okay.
But I think, you know what, given the landscape of the NFL, I take him if that's my best option, considering what else is out there.
There are some very lackluster QBs in this
correct.
League.
And
he's
I'd
okay.
be content with Sam Bradford.
He's okay.
Under those circumstances.
He's okay.
Yeah.
But I think you could certainly make a strong argument based on just last year alone, if you're going to grade Kirk Cousins off of that performance, Bradford would have to be the number 4 rated quarterback in the division, would he not?
Well, I mean, Romo went down, though. So don't you elevate him to maybe 3, considering all the Cowboys' issues?
Well,
if you look at what happened last season. He did play 14 games.
Considering, though, that Bradford has an injury history, and even when healthy, he has not done what Romo's done when Romo's been healthy.
Well, we're going based on last season. You're talking about overall
picture?
I'm
just saying overall.
Career?
I'm using okay. Cousins based on last year because that was his breakout. But I'm saying that right now, if you say on June 24th, you know, who you're, or 27, who are your 4 quarterbacks in order in the division? I'm going Eli, I'm going Romo, I'm going Cousins, and I'm going Bradford.
Well, the first two you named have the best resumes in terms of track record, what they're able to do season to season. Kirk Cousins is a guy that just arrived on the scene. He's young. There's upside there. And Bradford has had mixed results. But the common theme, at least between Bradford and Tony Romo, is durability, health, staying on the field. Knock on wood, that hasn't been an issue for Eli. And Kirk Cousins, the sample size is too small. We don't know what type of durability he has because this was his first season as a starter. So that's really unknown. But, yes, overall, I think the Giants and the Cowboys are secure where, you know, you pretty much know what you're going to get out of your quarterback. It's the other two teams. There's some highs and lows there.
And I'm giving Cousins the edge over Bradford only because I think even when Bradford has had the ability to play, his best days I don't think match up to what Cousins did last year. Cousins had a really good season.
Phenomenal season. You know? Especially in terms of protecting the football, which had been an issue for him
no question.
In his limited time on the field the year before. Now, at the same time, Bradford's had ball security issues too. I mean, if you look at the fumbles and you look at the interceptions.
No doubt.
The time he's been healthy, that's been
no
a problem.
Doubt.
So
no
what
doubt.
Cousins did in one season, that's been far more impressive than what Bradford has done, even in his best season.
We have an interesting one here from Chris Peterson. Says, do you think Kelvin Shepard will make the final 53-man roster? That's the middle linebacker the Giants signed from the Dolphins. And if so, what role will he play? You know, I don't know how many linebackers the Giants are going to keep. You could probably make an argument that they try to get away with five.
Wouldn't you think those six would be
the minimum? I would think six is where they're going to be.
That's what I would think.
You could try five. I don't think you will. I think it's going to be six. And that's going to be a fight. I'm going to tell you, that's a fight for me. I don't know.
To me, I think it really comes down to what Shepard does in the middle, if that's where they choose to play him, or can he spread out elsewhere on the outside and make a name for himself?
Who are the linebackers around the team? We know Kennard's on the team.
Yeah.
Thomas is on the team. Robinson is on the team. Brinkley's on the team. Casillas is on the team. That's five. Now, B.J. Goodson was drafted.
And he was a fourth-round pick.
Highly unlikely he gets cut unless he totally does nothing in training camp. He would be six.
Yeah.
So, Shepard's got himself a fight.
And that's why I said I think versatility is going to be the distinguishing quality, Paul, in this linebacking core. Can we put the guy in the middle? Can we put him on the strong side? Can we put him on the weak side? Or is he just a middle linebacker? Shepard, I think there's a little unknown with respect to him about where he would line up consistently in this Giants defense.
At the end of minicamp, he was lining up taking some first-team snaps as the middle linebacker.
Yeah. And that's where the Giants, when he first signed with the team, they envisioned him as a middle linebacker. But we have seen some movement of players on the outside, too.
Well, that's like Robinson.
Correct. That's why I want to see really what happens and how they utilize him in training camp. But right now, I think he has a very tough battle in the middle.
And once again, this provides another competition that everybody should be looking at during the preseason. As I've been saying now for weeks and weeks and weeks, Lance, you got to watch the fourth quarter of these preseason games because battles like this are going to be won right there on the field in the fourth quarter of these games. Don't turn away. Keep watching the games, okay?
Back into the rosters.
We have one here. A.J. Marshall asks something that I think I addressed with Zach. On paper, do you think the Eagles have the best defense in the NFC East? Talent-wise, as of today, I think you'd have to say they do.
Well, their defensive line is bringing back pretty much everybody. They didn't really lose a whole lot. They're getting Jordan Hicks back, who was their rookie linebacker last year. He unfortunately got hurt midway through the season. He was very productive. Their secondary, I think, is probably, Paul, if I were to evaluate their defense, the biggest question mark. I do like their safeties, Malcolm Jenkins and Roddy McLeod. I think that's a veteran 1-2 punch.
It's their corners.
It's the corners.
Which Zach mentioned.
But keep in mind, I think we've been talking about the Eagles' corners for the last few seasons.
I
go back to 14 when they had trouble going up against Dez Bryant and company. You know, that came back to haunt them late in the season. And then last year, because of injuries and guys in and out of the lineup.
I think the interesting part to this potential equation for the Eagles is Rowe. Eric Rowe, who they've got right now slotted as the backup left corner. This is a guy who, coming out of school, was one of those corner/safeties. A guy who many people felt would be a steal in the draft and could play either position. I think his development at corner would be very significant in terms of them trying to find an upgrade outside.
wholeheartedly agree with you. Another X factor in the secondary is somebody they re-signed, who actually, you can make the point, was probably one of their most productive corners, is Nolan Carroll, because he also dealt with an injury last season. Yep. He's that versatile veteran. You know, that to me is another X factor, because in a pinch, if you got to move him outside, you move him inside, he has experience there. But Eric Rowe, when they drafted him, you know, you figured this was going to be the guy for the future. And remember, he came with a resume, Paul. You could play him at safety. You could also play him at corner.
He had a very high make it great.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. He's a legit prospect. We have a Parunga Salzer says about the Giants, will we have a defensive captain? I vote JPP, DRC, Snacks. And then he puts ODB.
He's voting a lot of guys.
He puts ODB, which I guess is Odell Beckham, but Beckham plays offense. I don't think he's going to be the defensive captain.
Although I'm sure Odell Beckham could play defense based on his versatility.
He played deep safety one time in a game last year. Remember that?
Well, he's done a lot of things. I'm losing track at this point, Paul, in terms of his athletic resume. I wouldn't doubt that. But it's an interesting question because John Beeson, no longer with the team, he was the defensive captain last year. And that was one of the things we've talked about throughout this offseason. You know, who's going to emerge as the voice in the locker room and so forth? I think there's a few candidates that certainly come to mind with respect to that.
Right.
Of the names that he wrote on Twitter, is there anyone to you that you think would be the front runner out of that group, obviously with the exception of ODB?
Well, I'm going to tell you flat out. I said this on NFL Network, and I'm going to say it right here on this program. I think there's a possibility that JPP, if the vote comes down to the players, if Coach McAdoo decides, and I've heard him say something like, you know, we may not have captains, but if they do, I would not be surprised if the players voted JPP, at least a co-defensive captain, if nothing else, because I see a maturity in him. I see a connection to Giants championship years. I also see a guy who is incredibly focused and appreciative of being in this building and having a career in the National Football League. And this is a guy who has grown up immeasurably. Remember, he's also had a child. You know, over the course
a lot too,
of his time here.
Physically and mentally.
And there was the fireworks thing. So I'm going to tell you, I wouldn't have said it 5 years ago.
That's fair.
But today, I wouldn't be shocked.
What about Jasper Brinkley? That's one guy that comes to
mind. If he wins the starting middle linebacker job, I think he certainly has a chance to do that. If he doesn't win the starting middle linebacker job, let's say Robinson beats him out during the preseason, then it's pretty hard for him to be a captain.
That's fair. In terms of some of the new arrivals, too. Because remember, Beeson was a new arrival, and he automatically earned the respect of his teammates. So when you think about the free agents that have first come in here, Olivier Vernon, a Damon Harrison, a Janoris Jenkins, I don't know if necessarily anybody within that group, Paul, is going to emerge as a vocal voice or presence, in year one at least, I would
say. I don't get that sense either. Although I do get a sense from all three of those guys, they appreciate what it is to be a Giant. They certainly have respect for the heritage of this organization. A couple of other tweets I want to get to.
And keep bringing in the tweets, by the way. We certainly appreciate the interaction on social media, hashtag Giants Chat. We're covering it all here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've focused in on the Eagles early in the program. Right now, Paul and I, just going across the landscape as well as the Giants roster.
Yeah, hit us up on hashtag Giants Chat or, again, Giants WFAN and Lance Meadow, M-E-D-O-W. We have KV says, what do you think Coach McAdoo brings to the table that Coughlin didn't? I don't know that there's a missing component or an additional component as much as it just is a different voice, you know? I don't think Tom Coughlin was missing anything, and I don't think that Coach McAdoo has anything extra. I just think it's a different voice. And, of course, the coaching staff, half of the coaching staff has changed.
Yeah.
That could probably be a bigger difference that will or impact that will have on these players than the actual head coaches themselves.
Though you can sense that there is somewhat of a different feel, Paul, just observing the off-season program. And that's not necessarily a surprise.
There has to be.
But just, you know, the vibe with the music, the Ben McAdoo approach with fundamentals, just a little different. But, you know, to say that they weren't preaching those things under Tom Coughlin would be extremely misleading. It's just
correct.
Every new coach, whether you be young, whether you be old, whether you be inexperienced, whether you be experienced, year one, you want to put your stamp on the team.
You want to inject a little peppermint into the club.
Exactly. So even if Ben McAdoo, and he's been on the record saying he respects everything that Tom Coughlin did, and Tom Coughlin served as a mentor, just as Mike McCarthy did when he was in Green Bay, he's still going to do things, not necessarily to stretch it, but he wants to separate himself from Coughlin because he wants the team to know it's a new regime, it's a new era, and we're going to make some tweaks. And I think you did get a sense of that throughout the offseason program.
All right, we have A.J. Marshall gets back to us again. A second go-round says, Ryan Malik's been impressive at OTAs. He's a free agent tight end from South Jersey, I might add. The Giants got to keep him on the practice squad if he doesn't make the 53. Look, the tight end position is another one where there's going to be a hot battle. Think about the tight ends now. I think it's possible they could keep four, okay? Now, if you go with Danelle and Ty, the two incumbents, you go with, you would think, you know, Will Johnson's obviously going to make it because he was signed from the Steelers.
Though he could be designated as a fullback.
He could, but I'm going to say for the purposes of this argument, he's a tight end.
Okay.
Now, maybe one spot. Now you're looking at Malik. You're looking at Lacoste.
You're looking
at Jarrell Adams. Boy, that's a lot of fight going on right there for a few spots. For one, actually, the way I see it. And I'm going there because I think four tight ends gets kept at the expense of a fullback. I think the key to Whitlock, it's funny, he's a fullback who really doesn't have any experience competition on the roster in training camp coming in, but I don't think he's fighting with fullbacks. Nikita Whitlock is fighting to make this team, I think, against a tight end.
That's interesting. I mean, the way that I was looking at it, Paul, I was looking at it three tight ends and then perhaps Will Johnson, if he beats out Whitlock, designated as the fullback. That's how you have the four tight ends. But you're saying that there may not even be someone designated as a fullback, and it could just be four tight ends, one of them which will serve as the fullback.
Because, yeah, Will Johnson will be a hybrid.
He's a jack of all trades. He's played a variety of different positions.
Bottom line is, I don't think that between the two spots, however you want to label them, I don't think you're keeping more than four.
No, I can't see more than four. And I was actually looking back at some of the trends that the Giants went about. There was a year the Giants kept two tight ends.
Yeah.
Back in 2012. And then they've kept four. And then they've kept three recently. It really has been all across the board. That's why a lot is going to come down to the competition in training camp and whether or not they see enough versatility to say, hey, we can't let go of this guy. Though the one thing I want to add to AJ's tweet, you know, when he says the Giants have to keep him on the practice squad if he doesn't make the 53. Remember, everybody's got to go through waivers. It's not just so simple that once you cut a player, he's automatically going to the practice squad, Paul. He gets through waivers. Teams have an opportunity to claim him if he has an impressive training camp.
Yeah, there is a 10-member practice squad again this season. I would think Malik would be a great fit for that should he not make the team and should he clear. So I'm on board with you. He's a guy who I think, you know, has shown something, and I certainly would like to keep him around if at all possible. But you're right, Lance. You know, he could get claimed, and then, you know, you lose him, you lose him. But I don't see them being able to keep more than four at the two combined positions, however you want to label them. Nathaniel gets back to us again, talking about the linebackers. I believe he was the one who asked about Shepard before.
Yeah.
He says, can Goodson go to the practice squad? Well, I'm going to refer to what you just said a minute ago. They got to go through waivers to get to the practice squad. What's the odds that a player from a big-time college program who was drafted in the fourth round gets through waivers to the practice squad? What are the odds of that, Lance?
Very rare, considering, you know, everybody's going to be on film, teams are scouting and so forth. That's why I would say the chances of him making the 53 are probably very high, given where he was drafted and the fact that he's looked good in the offseason program, too. Let's not forget about that. I think that bodes very well for him. The chances of you cutting ties with one of your top four picks and then retaining him, meaning he goes through waivers unclaimed and you're able to put him on a practice squad, in this day and age, I think is quite slim.
We have a tweet from Frank the Tank, at RomoCop74. Says, apparently Ocho, that's Ocho Cinco, thinks Sterling Shepard has some talent. And he's RTing a Chad Johnson tweet that says, who is number 87 for the Giants? Young Bull Roots looks exquisite on NFL Network. So apparently Chad Ocho Cinco has seen highlights of Sterling Shepard and is impressed.
Well, I think most people who cover the team have been impressed, too.
We all are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he went out on a limb there to say that. He was an experienced college player who went through all 4 years. So there's more than enough film and tape to realize that Sterling Shepard certainly has upside and has potential. We appear to have our phones up and running.
Give out the number, and then we'll hit a few of these quickly.
Correct.
Again.
We're going to reopen up the phone lines. We still have plenty of time left on the program. You want to chime in at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat, though. You can keep the tweets coming, and we want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, what other tweets you want to run us through here, Paul?
Real quick, Chris Peterson says, which player would you have as your surprise starter for the upcoming season? I'm going to say Will Johnson, because I think everybody thought that maybe Donnell or Ty would be the starting tight end this year. I'm going to tell you, they signed Will Johnson for a reason. I think Will Johnson could very easily be the opening day starter at tight end against Dallas.
Well, that's a good one, and it depends on the alignment, too.
No question.
What the Giants choose. Remember, starters, it's a
doesn't
very interesting label. Because
doesn't mean much.
All it means is you were out there for the first play, Paul.
Correct.
And then you could have went back to the bench. You went down as a starter.
You can start four wides if you want.
Absolutely. That's why when everybody defines it as a starter, I'm like, well, you know, put it in perspective a little bit. Don't necessarily
run
with it. In terms of
who?
A name for a starter,
you want to throw one out there?
With?
Well, you like Will Johnson.
I like Will Johnson.
Okay.
I think that's a good one. I'm trying to think here real quickly who else perhaps I would throw out that would surprise me as a starter day one. In terms of, you know, I'll throw out, I'd be surprised. Once again, I think he's been productive. Who were we talking about earlier? B.J. Goodson is a starter at linebacker. I think that there's some experience in front of him, specifically in the middle, that if he beats them out, he would probably have then an outstanding training camp. So I'll throw him out there as perhaps being a surprise if he ultimately wins that starting middle linebacker job.
All right, quickly, we have Purunga Salzer says, the opponent that scares me the most is Antonio Brown. I think that was a question we had on Giants.com during one of our debates, our crossfires, or something at least along those lines. Let's see here. Charlie. Charlie wants to know, where is our right tackle, Monroe? And he laughs. Ha. You know,
even on Twitter, he keeps the same storyline going.
Well, you know what?
Give him credit for that.
Coach McAdoo says the story is yet to be written, and I have yet to hear him say that the chapter's closed. So it's still
Fair
an
point.
Open book.
Absolutely.
Well, until he says otherwise.
Well, but that's his favorite book for Charlie, though.
It
that's
is.
All I'm saying. He doesn't read another chapter that you have any
Charlie,
interest in.
Charlie, I'm doing all I can for you, okay? I'm doing all I can. The radar is out to help that offensive line out, and if they can get an upgrade and they can get him in here, I know you'll be happy, and you know, I'm trying to help any way I can, okay? Unfortunately, Carl Nelson's already retired.
Yes, we'll get back to a few more tweets as we move along to the top of the hour. The phones are up and running, so we want to get to the phones here. People have been patiently waiting, and we certainly appreciate your patience. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, great to talk to you. I just hit it right to be able to call you. So following up on what you're talking about there, first with the practice squad now, I know when you sign somebody, when the season starts, if you sign somebody off a player's practice squad, they have to go to your
53.
But in the beginning there, if you can sign like a rookie or so, and he can go right to your practice squad, correct, from a different team?
No. Before the 53, if you sign a guy, he's got to be on your training camp roster. Once you start trimming that training camp roster and you get down to the final cut, now, anybody who you expose during that final cut is out there to be had. They are free agents, okay? Now, whatever you decide you want to do, if the guy is a veteran, he's got to go, he gets cut, and he's released. He doesn't have to go through waivers. If he's a first- or second-year player, he's got to go through waivers.
I'm saying a rookie, Paul, from a different team that's goes on waivers, you know, after you're 53, can you sign them to your practice squad?
After he's waived, if he clears and becomes a free agent, you can then put him on a practice squad. If a rookie gets cut from another team and he's put on waivers and you claim him, he's got to go on your 53. You can't claim a guy off waivers and put him on your practice squad.
Right, I understand. Once he's on the 53, I understand that. So, okay, so I guess we got this correct there.
Yeah.
And then following up, I think, with the division, I said it's going to be a key thing because with our team to cover these tight ends. Like I said, I'm more concerned about the Eagles' tight ends because they always receive a lot of balls. Dallas's tight ends, and then you heard the guy from Washington saying he might throw out four tight ends this year. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, we got to cover these guys. That's the key. All the time you look in it, there's, you know what I mean, they have 10 to 15 receptions, so we got to be able to cover them guys. And then following up on one other thing there, who's the tackle?
It looks like we may have lost Joe there. I don't know. He was referring to a tackle. Not sure if it was an Eagle.
Joe, you still there?
Or a Redskin. Joe, you on the line still? All right. Looks like we may
He's
have lost
gone.
Joe. But in terms of the tackle, I don't know who he's referring to, whether he's referring to an Eagle or a Redskin. In the meantime, let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. We got Dave in Manhattan. Dave, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Dave.
Well, Dave, how's things with you?
Good. Great. Thank you. Let me just tell you, you know, I'm a longtime Giants fan. I haven't missed a game since Kurt Warner was quarterback. And, you know, I DVR these games. I rewatch them over and over again. You know, I bet on football games. And there's something that I follow all NFL teams, but I'm a really hardcore Giant fan. You know, I want to piggyback on what the last caller said about the tight ends. From what you guys have seen in the middle linebacker position, who's shown the best coverage of the middle linebackers? Because what I've seen from the Giants, they get the middle linebackers along with the free safety, but I think Darian Thompson is going to hopefully do a good job this year. But who do you think from the linebacker position has shown good coverage ability?
Well, see, that's a hard one to answer because a lot of times what the Giants have worked on here in the minicamp was their sub package. And when they went that way before JT Thomas got hurt, you know, it was Casillas was out there. We saw some Robinson out there. We saw some Thomas out there. I mean, it's a hard question to answer right now. Based on what we heard from the Redskins media fellow the other day, he said to us that he felt that Robinson had solid coverage skills against tight ends while he was in Washington. And so
I heard the same thing, so
until I get a chance to really get a good look at him in preseason, I'm going to reserve judgment.
The other thing you have to take into consideration, you know, there's limited contact in terms of OTAs and minicamp. So,
yeah.
You know, it's hard to really gauge, you know, who truly can stick with a tight end with the physicality and everything. I'd agree with Paul. I think Keenan Robinson probably brings the best resume to the table. JT Thomas, you were referring to the sub package. You know, they were utilizing him when they had two linebackers out there.
They
at
did
times.
Some, and they also had some with Kennard out there with Casillas, too.
So, you know, you could start to at least think about who they envision having the most versatility for passing downs and who they'd want out there. And I remember seeing, you know, Casillas was out there for passing downs last season.
No question.
So, you know, he may be somebody that they're going to utilize in those schemes. But I think Robinson may have the most appealing resume in terms of you feel he'll be a good matchup for a tight end who comes across the middle.
Yes. Do you think Giants are going to play Landon Collins more in the box this year?
One would think so, based on the fact that Darian Thompson looks like he's a better deep safety.
Yeah, because I think if they play Collins in the box this year, the guy is going to be a Pro Bowler. And, you know, in that first game against Dallas with Ezekiel Elliott, they're going to be running the ball and trying to control the clock a lot. So if you keep Collins in the box, I think he'll do a really good job of, you know, and he strips the ball. He can force fumbles. You know, he's physical.
He's a good player.
You know, He's like a linebacker. He reminds me of more of a linebacker, you know?
Well, the other thing to keep in mind, Dave, with respect to, you know, the urgency to maybe have Landon Collins down in the box, they did address the defensive line. And I think the Giants are hoping that you can stop the run with your front four as opposed to now sacrificing members of your secondary. Because remember, it's a pass-happy league. That's not going away. Regardless of the urgency to stop the run, teams are going to look to throw on you, and they're going to need Landon Collins to help support the corners, not just all of a sudden be down in the box.
Oh, you really want that beef up front to clog the holes
Correct.
More than anything else.
Exactly.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
I know Charlie gets picked on quite a bit, but I actually agree with some of the things he says. I agree with him about the right tackle position. But, you know, I trust the Giants. They're going to get it, you know, figured it out and everything like that. You know, I have a lot of games last year where I watched with Marshall Newhouse. You know, to me, he just doesn't have the motor. And now with this draft that just came aboard with the depth on the defensive ends, you know, I hope, you know, they, you know, the Giants have a tight end that can help them out, help out with the blocking, or are the Giants going to run a fullback this year?
I think, again, Will Johnson's going to wind up taking that spot, and he is a good blocker. That's why the Giants signed him. He did that in Pittsburgh. So, you know, I fully expect him to be utilized in that way here. Thanks for the call.
Appreciate it, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right,
take care.
You got it. All right, we're going to stay in New York City. We're going to now hear from Greg in Brooklyn. Greg, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, gentlemen? How
are
you guys doing today?
Good to talk to you. How are you?
Excellent. So something I just wanted to touch on real quick. I heard Charlie's comment about the right tackle, right?
Yeah.
Who hasn't at this point?
You got that right. Now, I love Charlie, and I totally agree 100%. You know,
wow, that's
I really
two for
do think,
two today.
You know, that's a big hole.
Woo.
So something that I keep thinking about, though, and I wanted to ask you guys about is, I don't know the exact figure, but we have salary cap money, but we're going to, you know, we can use it, but, you know, the goal is if we don't use it, it gets carried into next year, correct?
Correct, yep. Or, of course, you could use it to sign current guys to an extension.
Right. So, at who? I know Hankins next year is going to be going up for an extension. How about Odell? When is his contract up?
Well, Odell was drafted in 14, so he's going to be
right.
entering year 3. He should have two more years because you usually have the fifth-year option.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Correct. Right. Right. Fifth-year option. Okay. Because now what I was thinking was. Next year, I mean, I don't know what the salary cap is every year, but, you know, if we want to keep some of these guys that we have now, as much as I would love to sign a big-name right tackle, if we even can in this offseason, we got to even think about saving some of that money to, re-sign Hankins. For some reason, I thought Odell, but we have another year for him. But that's definitely going to be an interesting situation when that comes up, you know?
Well, you certainly have to anticipate that, but I don't know if it's necessarily an overwhelming factor on the minds of the Giants front office right now, because keep in mind, remember, Greg, you know, Jonathan Hankins is coming off a season where he tore his pectoral muscle and didn't play for the majority of the year. So, you know, they want to see that he could get back to the level when he had 7 sacks and he can help stop the run. So I think it's a little bit of a show-me period of time for that as well. I don't know necessarily if they're overwhelmingly worried about, well, we need X amount of dollars to now spend on this guy's extension.
As of now, I think it's premature to be talking about this, but I will give you very quickly the list of guys who are unrestricted free agents at the end of the 2016 season. And this is in order of the value of their contract this year, not about their value on the field, but the value of their contract. JPP, Keenan Robinson, Marshall Newhouse, Jasper Brinkley, Larry Donnell, Mark Herzlich, Jonathan Hankins, Zach Diassi, Ryan Nassib. Okay?
Okay.
And then beyond that, you're talking about lower-level salary players. But those are your top
right.
salaried players who are unrestricted at the end of the season.
Right. That's a big group. That's a good group of guys, you know?
Well, certainly you got a few of them like JPP who you may want to keep.
Correct. And if JPP has a career year or gets back to where
he was
before the injury, he's
going to need a big number.
He's going to demand money. Yeah, that's the market.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day, guys.
Absolutely.
You too.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Before we wrap up, let's head back to Twitter. I know there were a few more tweets, people wanting to chime in terms of some of the topics that we've been discussing. A.J. Marshall, very popular today. Charlie's popular everywhere, and A.J.'s been very forward in terms of his questions on Twitter. Who do you think is the third pass rusher, 00, Odighizuwa or Kerry Wynn? Who is the favorite right now?
Well, amongst the defensive linemen, it's got to be 00. I mean, I don't think there's much question about that.
It's just hard to say who came out of training, who came out of minicamp because they didn't have the pads.
Right,
on.
But if you had to put a projection on it and say who's got to be that third sacker from the defensive line, I would think 00's got to be the guy.
The opportunity's there. In terms of him developing to also a well-rounded player, somebody that can get to the quarterback and stop the run, especially when you take into consideration what he did in college at UCLA. Let's take a look at some other tweets here. Jonathan at @team_AAM_JBeast. Landon Collins reminds me of one of my favorite safeties ever, Jabril Wilson. Jabril made players scared to cross that middle.
I would totally disagree with that. Jabril Wilson was more of a free safety than he was a strong safety. He was extremely fast. They brought him on the safety blitz a lot. In fact, a lot of times he'd come on the safety blitz coming around the edge, not even up the middle. He'd come around the edge. He was very, very, very quick. Jabril used to get caught out of position a lot, but because he was so fast, he had closing speed, he could make up the difference and wind up making the play even though he was out of position. That's the kind of guy he was. He had, like, cornerback speed. Now, maybe it wasn't the 40 speed out of the combine, but he played fast like a corner. And so he constantly made mental errors and then made up for it with his quickness and his acceleration. That's not the case at all with Landon Collins.
Well, at least we have yet to see it. I mean, he's still very early in his career, but to jump the gun and make those bold statements, I wouldn't go there.
Landon Collins is a more physical player. He's a bigger player. He's going to be much more of a run stopper. Not that Jabril Wilson wasn't, because he led the team in tackles twice, I believe. So that's not what I'm getting at. What I'm getting at is he doesn't have the cat-like playing quickness that Jabril had, where Jabril could make up for mental mistakes with his quickness. To me, I think Landon Collins is going to be more of a cerebral player. He's not going to be making up for errors by jetting into the play at the last minute. That's not going to happen.
One other tweet I want to get to here from Angel at All In Entourage 1. Other than the starting 4-0, who we just talked about, who else has the best chance of making the squad along that defensive line? Well, you have to consider Kerry Wynn in that group.
Sure.
You can't eliminate him. In terms of some of the other players,
Bromley,
of course,
Nix, Hughes. Does Okwara make it from Notre Dame, the rookie free agent? Does Shaq Williams make it, rookie free agent? You know, there are some guys here who, you know, if they don't get in there at the 53 level, they're certainly going to be good practice squad candidates.
Now, in terms of the number of players that they would keep on the defensive line,
I'm going
nine. Talking about linebackers, nine. So if we throw Kerry Wynn in there to make it five, in addition to the starters, no, that would make it six, excuse me, the starting four.
Right.
And then the two backups, Owen, and Kerry Wynn, that's six. So you're thinking about maybe three opportunities.
You can't go more than nine.
That's fair.
Can't go more than
obviously,
nine.
Obviously, an injury or something that happens in training camp could change the equation. Not that we're saying that's
going
to happen.
Montori Hughes. Another guy.
Yeah, and he was also
Did we say Bromley?
Bromley, we said. Well, I didn't. You want to throw? I think we could throw him in to make it seven.
Probably.
I would say he could probably be penciled in right now. Seven. Yeah, probably. So then you're talking about two spots. After that, there's going to be some competition in a variety of positions on the back.
I told you. Watch the fourth quarter of these preseason games. Don't miss those snaps.
Can you say that again? Because I don't know if that message got through.
Watch the fourth quarter of the preseason games.
We're going to have that on a loop. With that being said, greatly appreciate the patience today on the program. We apologize for some of the technical difficulties, but for those of you who called in, we do appreciate you chiming in, as well as those of you on Twitter. And thanks to Zach Berman from the Philadelphia Inquirer for giving us some insight on the Philadelphia Eagles. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday at noon Eastern. We'll continue to preview all of the upcoming matchup. The Saints are on the dock tomorrow, and then we'll follow through on the rest of the schedule on the coming days. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks for watching Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Have a good one. We'll speak to you tomorrow.